Welcome to the Business Network Show with experienced networkers and business owners, Jill Russell and Linda Cloak.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Advertising your business can sometimes feel like you're trapped down a well, waiting for someone to respond. Choosing to market your business with fuzzy logic, you won't just be heard, you'll be seen. We offer website, social media and content creation packages that are fully bespoke to you and your business. And the best thing about it, we're affordable. So stop hiding and boost your digital presence using the power of fuzzy logic. Visit www.fuzzy.studio for more information.
Linda Cloak on the Business Networking Show.
Well, here I am, and I'm here with the lovely Gary Wood. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
And his business is Plumwood. So I'm going to start by asking you, how on earth did you come up with that name?
Well, it's fairly straightforward. I have a surname of Wood. My then partner and now wife is Sharon Plummer. So the domain was available. The limited company was available, so we just formed it from that.
Oh, fantastic. So what made you go into your – well, maybe better explain your business first and then tell us maybe what made you go into it.
Well, Plumwood is a slightly unusual business. It's it helps support people who have commercial vehicles, which is a fairly bland statement. But if you've got something larger than a transit van, you have to have something called an operator's licence. And when you get that operator's license, you sign these legal undertakings that you're going to do certain things correctly, like the maintenance, and make sure the drivers, their licenses haven't come off the back of a cornflake packet and things like that. And people get themselves in a mess. And I've got a brilliant team that stop them getting into that mess, or if they are in it, get them out of it. Otherwise, it can be quite an expensive mess to be in. So it's looking after the compliance, the legal side and the operational side in some ways of a commercial vehicle operator, be it a scaffolder, a bed shop delivering mattresses or something like that, a whole range of businesses.
It's amazing the differences that do use the different vehicles, isn't it, that have bigger than a transit van. There must be absolutely so many different types and varieties out there.
Well, the boring technical thing is that a transit van can take about a ton and a bit, really, on the back of it. If you're a scaffolder, that's about as much to get up to the letterbox on a house.
Oh.
So, you know, you're going to need, they would normally use what's called an 18-ton vehicle, and that can take 9 to 10 tons. So you can see immediately you've got 10 times the carrying capacity. You're not running to and fro the yard. But to have that, they've got to have an operator's license. They're scaffolders. They're not transport people. So terms like roller brakes and PMIs and all of that, that's not in their vocabulary. And you know, you don't expect them to be. I've got a great team that eat and sleep that.
So what? How many are in your team?
There's 7 of us in total.
Mm-hmm.
We're the forward-facing people all hold the correct professional qualifications. So that's a certificate of professional competence.
Mm-hmm.
So we've all studied, passed the exams and do the refreshers. You're not allowed really to practice, and nobody would take you seriously unless you've got those qualifications.
Mm. So tell me, how on earth did you get into it? What made you think, oh, I know, I'm going to do this as a business?
Well, I always say about my career, I never planned it.
We plan anything?
No. And also, I have the terribly annoying habit that I'm one of those people that if I fell over in a cow shed, I'd land on a bed of roses. So my original career was in technology. And I suppose sort of mid-late 40s, on reflection, and that's 20/20 vision, of course, I probably burnt out completely. And coming from a transport background, my parents had a coach business, but you know, I'm too grumpy to drive people around. I prefer to be on my own. I took an HGV license and went off and drove a truck for 3 years.
Oh.
Just to relax and reset.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard about this qualification, so I went and sat the exam and passed it. But I've been studying all my life, so that was fairly straightforward. And people started coming to me and saying, oh, I've got trouble with my tachograph, I've got trouble with this, I've got trouble with that, can you help me out? And by complete accident, it turned into a business, and that was 17 years ago, and we're still a business.
So did your wife join you straight away, or?
No, that was, again, a complete fluke. We hadn't long met when the business started, and she was a fleet manager for a house builder. So she had that background. And I sort of got going from the front bedroom sort of thing, as so many small businesses do.
Mm.
And then we actually hired Lindsay joined before Sharon did. So she was the second employee into the group. And it just got too big and too complex. And we took that massive big breath. We moved into an office. Oh, wow, an office, eh?
Now, that is a big step.
Oh, aren't you a grown up then when you when you walk out of the bedroom and down the stairs to go to work, isn't it? You know, and get dressed. So you suddenly become a grown up. And so we're in our, and that was a big move, but it was a good move. It's really interesting that going to an office from the front bedroom suddenly lifts the business, and we got busier just by changing address almost.
Mm.
And it came to the point that we had to take the big, deep breath, and she came in and, yeah, she probably will listen to this as well, but that really was a brilliant move.
Mm.
Because then you've got both of us in and with the passion, and then slowly we built up, we moved, and we just moved to some nice offices on the Medway City Estate. Mm. We've been there about 6 years now. And we've hired and got some fantastic people. I am, again, the luckiest person around. I've landed on that bed of roses. I've got a great team around us. And it just accelerated from there. And we deal with about 300 different companies all over the country. We probably look after, in total of fleet size, somewhere close to about 3,000 different vehicles.
Wow. So what business, do you find there's a certain type of business that maybe you need to look after more than another type?
It's usually a business that's got less than 20 vehicles. Once you get above 20 vehicles, the case is there for hiring your own internal qualified transport manager.
Mm.
But up to that 20 vehicle size, although there are businesses that have qualified transport managers and still use us as a sounding board and a secondary backstop for things, I'd say our traditional one would be in the 5 to 10 vehicle size is what the common we deal with. Generally, it's where transport isn't the main part of the business. So, as I said, the scaffolder, the builders, merchants, because they don't have to have a qualified transport manager in that size of, or that type of business, mm-hmm. without getting into the technicalities of it. So they will have someone in the office that looks after transport but won't understand all the nuances, and they're the little things that can get you into trouble and get new friends in high-vis vests. You don't want the new friends in vests, tell me.
I love the way he puts things across. You can actually visualise it, can't you? Tom's just joined us. Welcome, Tom.
Hello.
So Tom had a vehicle problem.
I did, yeah. Battery decided not to work anymore. The joyful AA came out, fixed it. My light pocket's a bit lighter, but we're all good now, so it's golden.
So have you met Gary before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and you understand his business? Okay.
I think so.
You'd like to think so. So do you find that there's, so you said obviously you and Sharon, it sort of, you know, lifted the business, moving into an office and everything like that. Why do you think it is that your team stay with you? Because, you know, you say that you've fallen on sort of, you know, lucky feet or whatever it is, but a lot of these things you think is lucky, but it's not lucky, is it? It's just that you're doing things right. What would you say is the culture in your company that makes people want to stay with you?
I don't know, someone, actually it was a Synergy in networking event. There's a name drop for you.
Thank you.
And you know those, yeah, there's a plug, I'll get the money later. You know there's those little things on the table and the questions. And mm-hmm. one of them, because surprisingly for me, I was floundering for words, that never normally happens. One of the things that was a question, what's the proudest moment in your organisation?
Mm.
And my answer to that was when one of my people disagree with me.
Ah.
Remember you saying that?
Yeah. And the reason is that they feel comfortable enough that, I mean, boss, trust me, Linda, you know me well enough. Boss, could you regard me as a boss? But they feel comfortable enough to disagree with me. And my second best moment is when they disagree with me and I'm wrong.
Mm.
Because they've got themselves inside the business and cuddle up into the business.
Mm.
So perhaps that's our culture. I don't know. We spend half the day laughing and the other half working, I'm sure.
Mm.
And then, of course, Sharon is legendary for feeding everybody in the office. I mean, we have crisps, biscuits.
You've got Easter coming up.
Oh, don't even go there. It's already somewhere factored in. When we did our ISO 9001, they ask, have you got a kettle? Have you got a toaster? And I'm going, yeah. Anything else? And I went, well, hang on, Sharon's got the microwave, the sandwich toaster. There's the air fryer. There's a coffee machine.
Got to have a coffee machine.
Yeah, there's a velvetizer as well somewhere in one of the drawers. I think we've used twice.
A what?
Hot chocolate. I don't know.
It's kind of a jug with a whisk in the bottom.
Oh.
You put milk in it. It warms it up. It spins it, and then you pour hotel chocolate in it.
You can spot the techie in it.
Wow.
Yeah, as you can tell, we've got one at home.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be disappointed if you didn't. But apparently we have one in a cupboard somewhere. And there's kind of, it's like we can do full catering. And you haven't seen the size of her fridge. So perhaps it's just, I don't know. I was very lucky that I did all my management training because my first career in IT, I worked with American companies. And I did my management training in the States. And there's lots of things that are wrong about American management, and I could sit and list them quite easily, but there are some certain things in how they relate to their people and how they nurture their people that I hope we've kept in our organisation.
I mean, a nurturing, I think, is a major part of job satisfaction, isn't it? When you know that the team are growing and developing and
enjoying being there.
Enjoying being there, and part of enjoying being there is learning and growing.
Something that started by accident is that we have mums. We know four of the team are mums, and they've got school kids. And by some fluke, it's ended up as a company policy. If the school phones and you've got to go, you don't ask permission, you go. You don't come and ask the boss, can I go? You just wave out as you go out the door and say where you're going. So we've got a rough idea if there's a fire alarm or something, apparently so. But we don't ask. It's expected that you're going to go. And you might hear that and think it's fairly straightforward and minor, but you talk to working mums and you suddenly discover it's a real big thing.
A rarity.
The fact that you don't ask to go, you go.
Mm.
But if you look at it analytically, would anybody say, no, you can't go let your child die at school? I mean, that's just not going to happen. How often does it happen? I can't remember the last. I know it happened last month, I think, but I don't really remember it because it was inconsequential. From the mercenary and from the employer angle, people will always look over the fence to see if the grass is greener.
Mm-hmm.
People always look around and see if they could get a better job elsewhere. And it's little things like that, that when they look over that fence, they go, well, would I be allowed to do that? And if they don't cost you any real money at the end of the day, but it creates a culture to keep people.
It's a shame, really, more, I suppose, companies haven't got that attitude because, I mean, I was reading a book, I remember piping on about it in Synergy, actually, about trust, and he was saying about a guy who was getting really busy. People were queuing up and he was so busy that he couldn't take the money. So people were thinking, I can't be bothered to wait in that queue. I'm just going to go straight past. So what he did was he started a trust basket. So people actually got their coffee, left their money. So he wasn't having to take the time to take the money. And he ended up having more money than if he'd stand and waited and taken all their money because he trusted them. So people therefore left him a tip because they were getting their coffee quicker and he was selling more coffees. And I think the trust factor, when you're an employer, is so important because it just lifts the staff, doesn't it? It really lifts the staff. What about in regards to your suppliers and the people you use? Do you go along the same lines? What's your thought process with people like that?
Well, suppliers is fairly minimal because, you know, probably it always used to be copier paper was our most expensive thing, but even that's now gone down. So we buy services, and they're usually from people that we've known and built a relationship with. It sounds like I'm doing shameless plugs, but you do know that a number of them are Synergy members that are people I've got to know through there and sat across the table with. And you build those relationships. They're great because things do go wrong from time to time. And you can phone me and go, yeah, what's happened here? And it's a laugh and a joke. And you fix it if you've got a personal relationship rather than somebody anonymous that you're dealing with. It's business relationships. If you go to Texas in particular, they say you've got to be there 20 years before anybody will do business with you because it's such a trust-based business relationship.
A bit like Tunbridge Wells then.
Do you know, actually it probably is. Yeah. Well, I grew up over that way. I went to school in Tunbridge, not Tunbridge Wells, but I Tunbridge Wells is an old haunt of mine, and trust me, I can remember it is very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting town, shall we say.
Okay, so let me find out a little bit, because obviously, did you know that Gary was in IT?
I think you've mentioned it before on one of the random times we've sat across from each other and had a few conversations.
So is this what you did when you left school? Did you go into, what did you do when you left?
I left school. I went to work for the government as a rating surveyor. So I was measuring buildings up for the government. So I got very, very quickly bored with that. Because once you've measured one wall, they're basically the same. You know, some are longer, some are shorter, but there's not a lot different. And by fluke, I didn't know what to do. Much to my mum's disappointment, I went off and tried selling cars, and then I fell into the computer industry just as it was starting. So, I mean, I'm talking the late 70s, which, you know, there's...
IBM days.
All before that.
Oh, right.
The IBM was, what, about 84, wasn't it? 84, 85, I think. Yeah, something about then. So, yeah, I'm back to things like Apple IIe's and, you know, the
okay.
It's like, you know, just about ran on electricity.
I know.
So I didn't have any qualifications to do that, but then nobody did.
No.
I remember my first hard disk, it was 10 megabytes. It cost about $8,000, and we all stood around it and went, nah, you're never going to fill that, are you?
Oh, if they only knew.
Oh, the naivety of youth. Isn't it terrible? Isn't it terrible? But and I had a talent for making it work. And I was very lucky to go and work for some of the biggest names in the industry in database engines, and then work for a company that we ended up selling it to Microsoft, and went through to the early 2000s when I'd literally, I mean, I spent a lot of time on planes and in hotels. I tallied up one year that I did 150 flights. So you kind of get a bit.
Wow.
Oh, you love it when you're doing it.
One a day.
Yeah, you miss it terribly when you stop. and it's great fun, you know. Popping through a couple of countries in a day, you know, waking up at a hotel and thinking, I know I'm in Germany, but where in Germany am I tonight? So, oh God, crazy things like that. Loads of stories, none of which I can tell. But, it was wonderful, and I had a fantastic time, and I learned lots and lots of useful skills that have helped the business, because we're very technical. You know, the customers have portals. We handle the quantity of customers because we've got our own in-house systems that I've gone back to writing stuff and scratching my head. And so we're pretty slick at what we do. And I'll come back. I've got a slick team that cover up for me.
And how? What's the best client for you? Who would you say is the best type of client for you? If you was to you know, maybe someone who might be able to refer new businesses to you, or who do you find that you get a lot of business from?
The ideal client is one that listens.
You're hoping.
Yeah, I know. The second best client is the one that comes to us before they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because that is so much cheaper than when you're in trouble.
Yes.
If you are in trouble, please do not come to us on Friday when you've got a hearing on Tuesday. We are very good at what we do, but there are certain things that we can only do in 48 hours.
Mm.
So, and you'd have had the papers for 6 weeks if you're going to a hearing. So don't leave it to the last minute. The longer we've got, the better. But it's such a strange industry. It's usually our biggest source of clients are our existing clients. You know, they'll say, oh, I've got a mate who's in trouble. Can you talk to him?
What sort of trouble?
So things unravel is probably the best way of describing things. So a driver should do a walk around check in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a legal requirement that he does that. And it, you know, just to make sure the wheels are all on and things like that, and all the lights are working.
Mm-hmm.
And they miss it because it's raining. So the driver sits in the cab and he uses what I call magic mirrors, because you can see the tread on the tyres from the mirrors. You know, I don't know where they come from, because they're such a clever little tool. If ever I could buy a set, I'd make a fortune. But they do things like that. So, you know, they get pulled in a DVSA road check and they'll go around, they see a bulb's out. Well, the minute that happens, the DVSA examiner goes, well, what else is wrong? What's missing here?
Mm.
You know, oh, no, that was working this morning. He would have heard that. So he'll look at the paperwork in the cab. You can tell things. It's ever so easy when you see as much of it as we do. You can look at things and say, no, that was never done like that properly. And then it all unpicks.
Mm.
So you've broken one legal undertaking. The vehicle is not being properly maintained. What about the tachographs? Has this driver got a valid license? Has it? And you will be surprised. Drivers have problems with their memories because they'll take a day off, go to court, lose their license, and they'll turn up for work the next morning having completely forgotten they've been disqualified for 3 months the day before.
Oh, no.
And that may well sound quite fantastic, but...
Doesn't surprise
me. Yeah, exactly. You know, that sort of, you know, magistrate's court amnesia. Because they think they get away with it. They think no one's checking their licence.
Wow.
Now, if you're sitting, having had your driver caught for not having a driving licence, another legal undertaking to... And the traffic commissioner always, like, repeats this to the people in the hearings. You know, do you remember signing this? Do you remember signing that? It's a... script they have, you know, is to make sure they're legally allowed to drive that vehicle. So you've broken two, and then the third one will be found, and the fourth one will be found, and then it all starts to unravel. And you're up in front of a hearing trying to keep your operator's license and not be disqualified.
Has it got worse? Because now we have to renew our license. Is it every 10 years now? Because I remember when I first got my driving license, it felt like it was going to last forever till I was 70. I mean, it hasn't lasted that long. But
the old paper-based ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, it's a totally different for a commercial vehicle driver because it's called a vocational license. They've chosen to go for a higher standard. So up until 45, you don't have to renew it except that the picture is renewed every 10 years. But at 45, you have to have a 5-yearly medical.
Oh.
And eyesight check as well. You also have to undertake... in a 5-year period, a set number of hours of training, refresher training on your driving skills, not the physical skills of driving, though that does come into it, but understanding the tachographs, the highway code and things like that.
Kind of CPD style.
Yes, stuff. It is. Yeah. So they have to do that as well. And these things get missed. You know, drivers forget to renew their medicals, so their license lapse.
Oh, gosh. And it, does it change very much in that 5 years? I mean, do they add things like they do seem to do a lot with things these days?
Yeah. There will be changes in – the legislation doesn't change drastically, but there'll be changes in interpretation of the legislation or there'll be crackdowns. I mean, loading is a big thing, making sure the load is securely strapped. Because there's been instances where there was a fatality down in Etchingham, where a light truck had a generator in the back and it hit a rut, of which we had plenty.
Yeah.
And it bounced out and killed a passerby on the pavement.
Oh, my goodness.
It hadn't been strapped down.
Wow.
So those cases like that, where the coroner asks the questions, what's happened, that immediately stirs up a hornet's nest of making sure that everything is strapped properly.
Mm.
And so there are things called ratchet. You've seen those sort of blue ratchet straps, yeah? We had an instance where an operator was stopped and the ratchet strap had been cut in half and the driver had tied it together in quite an elaborate knot. Well, I don't think the 5-ton braking strain on that ratchet strap might have been, a bit degenerated by having a knot in it. But those are the sort of things. And then a woof, what training have you been giving them on load security? When did you last inspect your straps? Where are the replacement straps if he does have a cut one? All these questions get asked and it all starts to unravel.
Mm-hmm.
So my team is, they're professional naggers. They spend their time telling opera, have you done this? Have you sorted that out? Do you know that vehicle is supposed to be going in for its PMI next week? Do you know you've got to tax that vehicle next week? You see vehicles being stopped even now with no tax on them because it's been forgotten about.
I suppose, a business could say, well, we're so busy, that's not something we look at, and that's why it's good to have someone like you there to just ring them up and say, have you done this, have you done that? It's a bit like me saying, have you booked?
I mean, if you want to retire into transport, there's a job for you, because you can nag with the best of them.
Oh, no, I can. Oh dear, oh dear. I don't know. So, Tom,
yes.
Before we go to Tom, actually, how do people get hold of you, Gary, if they're, presumably from a one-man scaffolder, do you get them?
Yes, yeah.
To somebody with however many?
Our largest client, although they have 15 vehicles, is a multi-million pound company. With massive offices up in Bedford, big plant up in Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
So the size of the business is irrelevant. It's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they run 15 trucks and we look after that. We get them their Fords accreditation, which is very important for London. That's Sharon's speciality.
Tell us about Fords before we go over to Tom. So I remember doing all that when we were doing your socials. What's the different standards of Fords you can get and why would someone go from one to another one?
Right. Well, the three standards are gold, silver and bronze. If you are delivering particularly to sites, but lots of organisations, London is very strong on it. It stands for the Fleet Operator Recognition Scheme and it's an annual audit where you are basically presented as an operator that has the safety systems in place, that your vehicles are safe, they are pedestrian and cyclist aware, they've got the equipment on them to drive in London's narrow streets. And having driven a truck, you have lots of blind spots and it's the appreciation of those and the equipment to mitigate that is what is one of the core thing of Fords, as well as your maintenance, checking your drivers have got licences, they haven't forgotten that they've lost it and things like that. We help people get through their Fours. So that's either to get them the bronze certification, the silver or the gold. That's really Sharon's speciality. I don't know how many years she's had a 100% record of getting our clients through Fours. It sounds incredible. If I said I can't actually remember. I think it's probably about 10 years ago somebody failed that she didn't get them through it. So
it's amazing.
As I started to say how many years, I'm thinking, I cannot remember the last time. It's absolutely perfect for her. It's her personality to manage that,
And that must help a company with their marketing. If they can say they've got Fours accreditation.
We've got a client in London that reckons Fours is responsible, having the Fours accreditation for their vehicles so that they can go on site and deliver building materials,
mm-hmm.
Accounts for 80% of their business.
Wow.
It's worth millions to them, that little sticker on the back of the truck.
Mm. That's amazing, isn't it? We're hoping that ISO 9001 is going to do the same for Synergy, actually.
We did that because we're also authorised by the DVSA to carry out earned recognition audits. So the DVSA have approved us as one of their authorised auditors, and we did ISO 9001 for that. And I think it was a brilliant exercise. It really was an eye-opener to the systems.
Yeah, that's why we're doing it.
Yeah, and I fully embrace it. I think it's a really great management tool for making you sit back and think, we could do that a lot better and we could be a bit slicker here, because it always is good to somebody come in and cast their eyes over your business, because, you know, we're all egotistical and think we do it perfectly. And, but there might be the odd flaw here and there that we wouldn't necessarily want to admit to. So I commend you for going to ISO.
Well, I think the reason we're doing it is because I want to make sure that we've got all the correct systems and processes in place ready for franchising. And it's so easy to think that you've got them in place, but then someone else looks over it and it's like, And I don't want everyone to have the hard time that I'm having, the franchisees going forward, in having to constantly chase up, really. I need that to be a bit slicker. So I think it'd be good to, you know, Julie's coming in and she's doing it, McLeish Consultancy, so that they're doing it for us. So we've got a meeting with them on the 23rd, so that'd be quite interesting. So how can people get hold of you, Gary, should they want to?
Plumwood.co.uk, or you can click through to us from the Synergy website as well. That's, how many plugs now have I done for you?
I know.
Checks in the post.
I know, yeah. I'll probably have to hand it over, Tom. Yeah. I don't think I'll get away with saying it's in the post. Thank you so much, Gary. So welcome, Tom. So Tom is one of our patrons, which is fantastic, from our IT Manager Services. So it's you along with the Arida Hotel and the...
One other now, wasn't there?
Sorry?
There's one other now, isn't there?
Yeah, Rohill Grange. So we've got Rohill Grange, the Arida Hotel. So yep. two of our patrons are venues. And yourself.
And us.
Yes, that's right. So I keep on trying to get the Arida Hotel to come on the radio show, because obviously that's one of the main benefits. I think I'm going to have to drag
them off.
I'm going to have to drag them kicking and screaming, I think. Because the thing is, if you've not done a radio show before, it's quite scary. It's difficult to describe how relaxed it is, really. So, it's getting that across. So tell us about your business. I know you've been on the show before, but I'm sure we've got, now we're on DAB Radio.
Yep.
DAB. I'm sure we've got lots of listeners listening who don't know about your business.
That's fine. So I run IT Manager Services. We're a IT support and cybersecurity company based in Chatham in Kent. We look after, as all IT companies will say, we can look after anyone with a computer, absolutely. But we specialize in accountants and professional services, charities and education.
Okay. And when did you move to the charities and education? And when did...
So if you kind of look back at our, so company founded 2019, at that point, it was automotive was one of our kind of main drivers. Accountants always have been, just because of my financial services background before I was IT. I was a bank manager. I worked for banks, yada, yada, yada. The charities and education side, kind of came on board when I started working with schools personally. So I went on to a governing body of a local primary school, and eventually ended up as chair of governors across two primary schools. I'm now a trustee for that trust.
Wow.
So I've kind of been nudged. So that kind of really kind of pushed the working with education, because I got to see it from kind of behind the scenes and how they worked. And then the charities was not something we never targeted. They kind of just found us, which was lovely. And now work some lovely charities who... You'll never meet a group of people who are more passionate about what they do than people who work at charities. And they're amazing to work with.
Yeah, I can imagine that, actually, just with some of the ones that I've met over the years. They are all passionate about what they do.
Yeah, they don't do it because I just want a job. They do it for what that charity is there for. At least the ones we've come across definitely tick that box.
Well, I know someone that went for an interview there and she said, you know, they want so much for their buck, sort of thing. And so really the only way that you can work for a charity is to be right in there and be a part of it, isn't it, really?
Oh, 100%.
A bit like running your own business.
Yeah. Whenever you go to start a business, obviously we've all, in the room at least, all been there. And yeah, it's not fun at the beginning. I suppose you so much pressure on you, so many hats you've got to wear, so many things you've got to do that you won't have thought about when you first go, I'm going to start a business. you've got to have that kind of, there's got to be a reason that you are trying to do this. Passion definitely kicks in.
So in regards to schools,
yes.
So I remember Elle bringing home a little iPad thingy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what, they're letting you bring that home from school? And I also remember going into
her
class.
Did you think she'd stolen it?
No.
Is that what you're going for?
No. She did have that lesson once. She walked down to a sweet shop and came back with a sweet. And I said, where'd you get that from? And I made her take it back. I walked her back to the shop. Yeah, she learned that lesson very early in life. And also the other thing I was surprised about is they're all allowed their phones in the classroom. I was so shocked when I walked in and they were allowed their phones on. In fact, it felt like no one was listening to the teacher. They were all looking at their phones.
We work with primary schools. Primary school kids don't tend to really have.
So they don't have that. So how have you found that the schools have, because they must have changed so much from, I mean, Elle's 27 now.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have changed so much from when she first went to senior school, 11 or 12, and now how it's changed from that first little iPad coming home.
Yeah, it's one of those things of, you don't realise how reliant schools are on technology and computers nowadays, not just for running the school, which, let's be fair, is a business at the end of the day, but actually teaching the children. There's so many apps and devices involved in just running a lesson. Whether it's your iPads, your laptops, sitting around it, the smart screens they've all got in classrooms so that it's no longer a blackboard or a whiteboard, it's a interactive giant TV.
Wow.
And everything they're writing is on there. When they're running presentations to the kids or teaching them, it's all interactive stuff on the boards, which is great in some respects, but they can be the most flaky devices going.
Oh, no. Okay.
When they work, they're amazing. When they decide, actually, I'm not going to work, they just give up.
And then they haven't got a tool to be able to teach children.
Then it's all reliant on actually going back to paper, which when your whole lesson is digitized, is a fun thing for them to scramble around.
The main benefit I think of, which I'm sure you can relate to, is that they haven't got a chalkboard wiper to throw at you anymore.
They've still got pens.
I was going to say, that's the first thing I thought of when you were saying about that.
And wasn't the sports master the best shot?
Yes.
No, mine was my humanities teacher.
Oh, you had them thrown at you as well.
No, he was blinding. He had some aim. He would get it to just kind of skim past people's heads. He was amazing. He never actually hit anyone, so he played it right.
So have you got grandchildren at school?
Not grandchildren, just
nephews and nieces, and
yes, and yeah, it is different.
Yeah, yeah. Very different, and it's quite scary, I think, to see how different it is. And the thing is, as well, for the teachers, they've got to deal with so much more than when we were younger, because they've got to deal with all the neurodiversity. They've got to deal with the different language skills.
Yeah, there's a lot of when you go into schools now, the SEND schools are massively oversubscribed, so the mainstream schools have to kind of take that runoff. So there's a lot of students in mainstream education that you would think they would be better off somewhere else where they've actually got a bit more support. And yes, mainstream schools are having to deal with a lot nowadays. Don't get me wrong, some of them are amazing at it, but it's not what the school was designed for or the staff originally trained for.
No. So do you find that technology helps them? And I'm going to ask you two questions here. The other one that's coming to mind is, do you find that some of the teachers are struggling with the technology as is now?
So if we look at the first one, so do I think technology is helping those sorts of children in school? Absolutely. Because you've got kids coming in who are almost nonverbal. Well, if they can't speak at the moment when they're first starting, especially when you look in primary schools, they can't write. Being able to press pictures on screens and things like that absolutely is a massive thing for them. So they can kind of communicate while they're building up those skills themselves. I think because tech has been in schools now slowly filtering its way in, I think most teachers have kind of had that kind of sneak its way in. So it's not been by the way, from next term, you now have to do all of this. It's bit by bit, everything kind of gradually creeps in. Schools don't have the budgets to go out and just randomly buy a ton of equipment. So it's got to be structured, it's got to be planned, it's got to be done in a clever way.
And I mean, we had a little thing with our WhatsApp, which I want to ask about, because I can imagine that that's a nightmare in regards to schools and other places. If somebody, because do you find that schools have WhatsApp groups and things, and maybe a parent would give away a code? And
so from our experience, so schools themselves try and stay away from WhatsApp. Parents will create WhatsApp groups.
Well, okay.
But they won't be run by the school. They won't be monitored by the school. The school's got no affiliation with it. The only kind of link you'll get is you might have some teachers in there because they're parents or because they're PTA or something like that. But yeah, schools, there's lots of systems out there that tick the right safeguarding elements that schools have to abide by because you've got children involved. So yeah, WhatsApp is one they tend to steer away from. For official purposes, anyway. I'm sure there's little teacher-to-teacher chats, but yes, anytime a parent's on a WhatsApp, it's nothing to do with the school.
And what about security? Is that one of the main problems that schools have?
Safeguarding. Safeguarding is where it ticks in, which, yes, we will kick with the security side. So it's making sure the children can access the things they need to and can't access things they really shouldn't, especially when you're looking for searching on the internet, which... Every computer in the school will be internet connected, all the tablets, all the devices. Safeguarding is definitely kind of their biggest thing. It is just making sure the pupils are safe in what they're doing.
Mm. So what about, have you got big security things in place?
Yeah.
Or your cyber security and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something we're really focusing on at Synergy as well, because obviously you're responsible for all of the members, but... There's nothing we can do in regards to...
To the incident you're referring to, no. It's not something you've done. It's not something you can make any changes to. At some point, one of the members on the group has allowed someone into their account and they've now got a copy of all the data that was there. That's it.
I remember when I was with Herbalife using something else that was like WhatsApp, but it isn't WhatsApp, it's something else. What is that one?
There are lots of them. There are lots of other applications that can do a similar thing. One of the ones that tends to get touted around quite a lot is ZenZap.
Oh, I haven't heard of that
one. Just because the difference, so when you look at WhatsApp, you send a message, it's gone to someone's phone, it's on their phone.
Mm.
You can't do anything about that. If you go to something, I'm not plugging ZenZap in any way, shape or form, but if you go to something like theirs, you can press a button, it will delete the data on that person's machine.
Oh.
So the data within that app.
Wow.
So it's a lot better if you're doing sort of staff communication, you're sharing sensitive data between staff, being able to press a button and go, they've left, they now cannot access any of that, it's done. WhatsApp is, yes, WhatsApp has WhatsApp Business, but WhatsApp is not really a business tool. It's text messaging in with a few extra bells and whistles. But because it's become so prevalent and so ingrained in everything that everyone's doing, it's just kind of become a de facto tool.
So how would you, the thing is that people don't like down, I had to download an app this morning and I was tutting and grunting.
We've got far too many of them already.
I know. And that's exactly what I said to my sister when I was downloading it. This is going to be deleted as soon as I've done what I've done. But people don't like really downloading. So if I was to say, well, we're not going to use WhatsApp in Synergy anymore, we're going to use this one, I think I might have a million rebellion.
Yeah, you kind of tried that with the send the messages through NetHub.
I did, yeah.
But people like convenience.
Yes.
People will drift to convenience. If there's two options, there's use this thing I'm not really used to using or use the one that I use every day, what are they going to do?
Yeah, that's
true. If they've got two options, human nature, we will go with the path of least resistance.
Mm. But then if they had used NetHub, they wouldn't have had the problem that they're having now, would they? Because they couldn't have shared a code, I don't think, on there. So
You can still log into it, but no, you wouldn't have had the same thing that's happened wouldn't have happened that way, no.
No, definitely not. Okay, is there anything else you want to tell us about your business being my only patron?
I suppose, yes, I've had to rewrite my kind of elevator pitch.
Oh, go on then.
My business has changed slightly.
Okay.
So obviously normally I'd come in and it'd be like, yeah, hi, I'm Tom Reveley. I'm owner of IT Manager Services. Great. Mm-hmm. I've now got bits on the front of that. So now it's very much I am a cybersecurity and AI speaker, author, trainer, as well as that side of things. So yes, at the moment I'm going through a period of rebranding me, as it were, to separate out the kind of speaking side of the business away from ITMS and into its own thing. People aren't generally, it's not a someone's getting IT manager services to come and speak, to come and present. They're after me doing that. So we're kind of rebranding that slightly.
So a bit of a personal brand going
on.
Yeah, see, I'm trying to get away from that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it, which way you go with your business. So I'm going to come away from Tom and I'm going to come away from Gary because we've got the Mudman in the room. So if you want to put on your little ear doodah things and then you have to come a bit closer. So Ricky, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Do you know Gary Wood?
No, we've never met.
Ricky Hemmings and Tom Revley.
Gentlemen.
Ricky Hemmings.
Hello.
We're introducing in the room. So we will come to speak to you in a minute. So I'm not going to actually interview you now. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew you were here. So what we're actually going to do now is we're going to just have a quick word with you about Mudman, and then we're going to go and I'm going to get Tom to read out from the chat the people who've asked for a shout out.
Can do that.
Because Mudman is AI. And it's Tom that made me talk to it. So you've got a little bit of a thing going on with AI, haven't you? Bit of a love relationship.
Yes, with ChatGPT. It's something that I've discovered and I'm using sort of standard social media platforms, LinkedIn predominantly, as a good networking medium.
Yep.
But what I've now found is ChatGPT was initially a little bit of fun, but I've now found how... you can interact and do particular things, and I've created a bit of a character that's mm-hmm. related to a lot of wet weather work that we do because my business is very active in wet weather, and we actually go into dry up construction sites with a specialist product.
Okay,
we just got the I think the Mudman thing was for our little, once again, picking up on what you said about internal fun. Uh-huh. So I'm the company principal, but we've got an active WhatsApp group and I encourage a little bit of lighthearted banter. I'm, you know, quite happy to, you know, have a bit of humour at my expense. So we, you know, the Mudman person initially was created on ChatGPT for a little bit of internal fun. But then once we actually put that out there into an external media platform, it actually really gained some traction mm-hmm. and just raised the profile. And I think the problem with sometimes with LinkedIn, it's almost like a number of apps, you know, scroll, 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 swipe, swipe, swipe. And if you've got, you know, Instagram is the thing and you've got content that's repetitive. It might be an individual that's repeating content uh-huh. or a number of companies that are processing similar content. So we've now found something that actually is...
different.
Yeah, different. And it works. So Mudman now has got his own cartoon, superhero cartoon, and the latest iteration is that Mudman's now got a vehicle.
Okay.
So my Ford Ranger outside has now been converted into something that's got some quite... funky graphics and other things there. So, yeah, it's still got some mileage in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. What could you be, Gary?
Do you know, I'm sitting here thinking exactly that.
I am.
The first three ideas I can't use, but I'm probably...
Or at least not say on air.
No. But something will come to me at about 3 a.m. as usual.
Yeah, I think it would be really good. And it would... The thing is, what it does do is it does get you noticed as a business when you do something like that because it is something different. Mm. So, you'll have to think of something. Mm. I mean, our song this morning for Gary was Highway to Hell, which for some of those drivers it must be, mustn't it? If they haven't got their fours in place and they haven't, you know, done certain things for compliance, then it is the highway to hell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. I'm guessing, Gary, that you then drove through Chilmington Green Road. To get here?
No, I didn't.
Speed bumps?
No, I didn't. I'm just working out whether there are enough speed. Well, there are the speed humps and there's the potholes. Which do you want to choose?
Which one slows you down more?
Yes.
Okay, so if we can go over to you, Tom, can you let us know who's asked for shout-outs, please?
We've had a shout-out here for John Nicholson of the Community Driving School, who have got an online quiz tomorrow evening from 8 till 10. So £6 a ticket. I'm waiting to see if they've actually put a link to it on here. So it's Community Driving School CIC, helps people gain independence through accessible driver training. On Thursday, 12th of March, they'll be hosting an online quiz night to support their work. £6 per person. Every penny raised going straight to CDS. There is a link, but it's quite a long link. So I'm not going to be able to give that one out.
No, don't worry. It's fine.
Quite a long message. Ross has another show, Killer Mistakes, at the Avenue Theatre in Sittingbourne on the 25th of April at 7 p.m. It says here, don't miss this five-star rated show described as hugely entertaining, deliciously dark, and endlessly fascinating, where we'll be exploring the psychology of serial killers, the mistakes that get them caught, why they sometimes convict the wrong people. It's not suitable for under 15s or the faint of heart. If you want to go to that, visit drfriday.co.uk for information and tickets.
Have you been to any of them, Tom?
I have not. I really should, because it's like round the corner from me.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it to be honest, it scares me. But
just the thought of going, or
no? I've been to two, and I'm a bit of a scaredy cat. I can't watch horror movies or anything like that. And I'm standing there, I'm watching him talking about these different killers, and I mean, I'm the last person anyone wants to kill. I'm way too old for a start off.
So you're saying you can't watch the fictionalised stuff, but hearing about the real stuff, you're golden and you're going to that.
No, I go to it to support Ross, but when I go there, I end up, you know, coming away. I mean, one of them, I ended up coming away and I'm like closing all my curtains and locking all my doors.
I remember you saying that.
So, it's very impactful, but great for somebody who loves horror and murder and all that sort of thing. Really good show.
So that's fair enough. Also, I have got a shout out here for Marshall Drone Service. They'll be at the 21 charity event at Kenwood Park, Yalding, on the 21st of March, showing off its drone tech and canvas prints. And there'll be many other stalls there, apparently.
Fantastic. And I believe, did Lisa ask for a shout out as well?
Have I missed it?
I think Kent Connections have got an event on.
They'll have their Pints and Prosecco. Yes, Pints and Prosecco at the Boathouse on the 19th of March, 6:30 p.m. I think that one's an Eventbrite booking.
For yes, that's right. Yeah. So the Boathouse is a fantastic venue.
Can I just qualify? That was Pints
and Prosecco.
And Prosecco, not Pints of. Oh.
You could do that if you wanted. Yeah. It would be a different sort of event.
Absolutely, yeah. So
on the theme of events, we've actually got Whitstable this evening in the beautiful Crescent Turner Hotel. If you haven't been there, then the hotel is amazing. It's fantastic for a Sunday lunch. I used to go there with my mum all the time. It's got views all the way across the Whitstable Bay to Sheppey, and it's just a fantastic venue. Yeah, I mean, the sunsets there are just stunning, absolutely stunning. So, and it's been really lovely because we've been able to network outside. The food there is amazing. Service is amazing. So really fantastic hotel. So we're there this evening for our networking this evening. Tomorrow we are Beams are doing a lunch and they're doing a lunch at the Star in Sidcup. So that's our charity that supports our Sidcup and Dartford groups. And then next week we've got an umbrella of businesses taking part in the expo for best business events. And that's at the Ashford International Hotel. So I think breakfast is at 8. Are you going for the breakfast?
I'm not going for the breakfast because I'll be helping set the stalls up.
Yeah, that's the same as me. So Nick Inge is one of the speakers at the breakfast of iTrust. And obviously they've got other speakers there as well. So that'd be really good. And then at the end of the month, we're working with Ricky's daughter, Rosie, and we're doing an event for International Women's Day, which is Rosie's giving basically away hand massages and feet massages. And there's also going to be cakes and tea and coffee there. So we're there in the Rose Rooms from 2 p.m. on Friday the 27th. So you can come and have a massage and then a bit of cake and coffee and then go home. Make it an early week. So some great events coming up.
You've got Maidstone Synergy on next Monday, isn't that?
We've got Maidstone at the Arida Hotel. Yeah. I was saying earlier, we're trying to get one of the guys to come on to the show and talk about the Arida Hotel. I actually use the gym there now.
Okay.
And I love it. I mean, it depends whether you like a big gym or a little one. I prefer to know where I am. I don't like getting lost in there. So it's a smaller gym and the pool facilities and everything there and steam jacuzzi and everything. So absolutely brilliant. And I'm going to start using someone who's been coming along. I don't know if you've met him. The chap that does all of the training.
Yes. Yeah, he's now branded, isn't he?
Yes,
he's got
his
own branded stuff.
Yes. Nathan? Sorry, darling, it's because you haven't been for the last 2 months.
Turn up and she'll remember you.
Yes, that's right. So I'm going to start using him as a bit of a PT. So that's going to be really good as well. So we're going to go to a little bit of a break. And the song that we've got actually is Major Tom. Because we couldn't think of another one.
Fair enough.
So we're just going to have a little bit of a comfort break, get some tea and coffee. So we will be with you again soon. Take care, guys.
Tired of IT headaches? Slow computers, security worries, lost files. Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly, securely and stress-free. Call 0179-534-2362 now and get your IT sorted.
Tired of business networking that feels like hard work? It shouldn't be a chore. It should be a chance to grow. Join the Synergy Business Community and connect with like-minded professionals right in your area. We provide the opportunities to boost your brand's visibility and growth without the stress. Stop wishing for better contacts. Start building them. Visit synergynetworkingevents.co.uk today or call us at 077-699-43756.
That is not the Major Tom I was expecting.
Bit of a curveball.
It's my own fault because I thought it was going to be David Bowie, but I should have looked because it says Peter Schilling. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. There you go. And I just wanted to let you know who's on the next show that I'm doing. Jill's on next week. And the next show I'm doing, we've got Jules Tobin and we've got Ryan Grist and we've also got Hazel Hall coming on the show. So that's on the 25th of March. So just letting you know what's going on there. And so over now to you just to ask, how can people get hold of you, Tom?
So depending what you're after, if you're looking for sort of the IT support side, best things to do is jump on our website. So go to it-ms.co.uk. Or give us a call on 01634 218362. If you're after speaking, training, cybersecurity, AI type stuff, easiest way at the moment is through my LinkedIn. So just search for me. My name's quite unique, so we're all good.
Well, when you spell it correctly.
That's always a good start.
Yes.
And don't call me Tim.
No, that's that is predictive text. Have you ever tried doing that, putting in Tom? It always gives you Tim.
I don't think I know anybody that... Right, too. I'll have to try it out now, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I type in Tom. Always comes back Tim.
Yeah.
So, Ricky, right, you've just joined Synergy, so you're a new member, and you came along to your first event on Monday in Ashford.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, and I've given you this little bit of feedback anyway, but for the benefit of listeners, the event had got a number of questions. And that, mm-hmm. that's it, you know, it's the, you know, the process, guys. And the first question that I faced and had to respond to was all about the culture of the business. How do you use one word to describe the culture of your business? Now, given that my business is a construction, roughy-tufty, working in mud and dirt and things like that, the rather surprising word that I used was tactile. And the other person that was in the project went, okay. But I just went on to explain that this all goes to about how we value people as a business. So although I'm the company principal, I've got no problems in walking up to one of the guys on site and if he's working hard. And I've seen in the last 2 months people working in some really difficult ground conditions, working in cold, wet, rain. And I can go up and just give these guys a hug. Yeah, well done, remediology hard. Come on, guys. And it's as a business, it's the way that we do things. And so tactile, I thought, was just the most appropriate way to set across the culture of the business, because it's about that investment in people, Linda, how we look at that, how we value them, and how I let them know that they're valued and part of the business. And that's just like a real simple way. Look, we all respond to human touch. It's a fundamental part of you know, the anthropology of what we are, and that's it. You know, these guys respond positively to it. They like it, and so yeah, it is just a general facet of the business and how we look to ensure that the team of guys that we've got, there's 12 people there, and I just want them to understand that, that we value them, and also that I'm on a level with them.
Okay.
It just breaks down a barrier of, between sort of, you know, management and site staff. It's a way of levelling things out as well.
So just do a bit of matchmaking here. What vehicles do your men drive?
They mainly drive Ford Transit Customs. And they're mainly orange. And so
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a brand thing going on there, and of course then Mudman has got his particular Ford Ranger orange. So yeah, we've got a little bit of a fleet thing going on there.
So have you already had that sign written, or can
No, not yet. No,
but, I can help someone that can, I've got someone, yeah, who can help you with that one.
I'm thinking on that. I might have to go magnetic.
I think it'd be brilliant to have Mudman on the side of it.
The version that ChatGPT came up with was actually very entertaining.
Mm.
And on the Synergy post, on the LinkedIn post, I think Martha was one of the people that a friend of mine commented on our photo.
Mm.
And I then posted the Mudman vehicle poster, and that was it.
Mm.
Once again, if you just look back to what I was saying, you know, briefly earlier on, it's all about maybe sort of being fairly sort of self-effacing. Part of the culture of the business, once again, that I'm happy to not be made fun of, but actually to say something like that, you know, in that humorous element.
Yeah.
I'm not setting myself above any of the guys that work for us.
You're all a team.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Brilliant. We were talking about that earlier with you, Gary, weren't you, and all of your girls?
Yeah.
I don't think you could go up and hug them.
I think they'd be fairly horrified, actually.
You'd get away with it with Sharon.
Yeah, I can do it with Sharon. I can get away. Well, I'm not even sure of that some days, actually. Yeah.
You are only married to
her.
Yeah. We've got glass offices, and people ask, is it bulletproof between us two?
Brilliant. So tell me what you do. Remediology, what actually does that mean? And
okay, so as a business, we go into construction sites and we remediate the ground. So that's the first part of the name of the business. We remediate it.
Sorry, I'm going to go back because there's people listening who haven't got the faintest idea what that means.
Okay, so we'll, if the ground is contaminated or it wants improvement of some sort, so a typical construction site, the first thing that they do is they dig the road, put the road in, install the drainage, and people will be familiar with lorries because they'll be stuck behind one, a big muddy tipper lorry, and it's actually leaving the site or it's driving in and someone's just been to the car wash and their car's now covered in dirt and stones from this lorry. And that drives in and takes a load of soil away, and then another lorry turns up with a load of crushed concrete or gravel or stone, and that gets tipped into the site. Well, our process effectively remediates the soil to mitigate both of those processes. Mm-hmm. So the soil actually stays on site, and we add lime and cement to it to get it to a construction approved standard. And in the last 3.5 years, we've done over 50 projects in Kent that are all KCC approved roads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process. So for listeners there, it's to understand that, you know, we're remediating. So the next part of the business name, it really links back to people that may be able to remember Maureen Lipman in the BT adverts of the 80s and 90s, where she was delighted to say that her son had got an ology.
Yes.
Yeah, your O-level was, he's got an ology, my boy, he's got an ology. And, you know, she wasn't Welsh, by the way, it was a very poor Jewish accent, but so that's it, you know, remediate as a verb and ology as a scientific noun. So that's how remediology was born.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually check out the domain names, mm-hmm, to make sure that we were, that there
you
wasn't anything else. Yeah. And there it was. So remediology.com was available. And the only other thing that actually is anything like it, it's a form of treatment, beauty type treatment in Australia. So the only other people that are using that...
So mud there phrase, as well, then?
Something like that. Yeah, mud facials and the like. So remediology was actually born a few years ago now, and it's just going from strength to strength because it's very much, as a business, it's carbon positive in terms of what we're doing. And I think, you know, if you look at Kent, the amount of arterial roads and Operation Stack and Dover Tap and these other sort of things, anything that we're doing to actually take vehicles off the road. So statistically, last year we stabilised well in excess of 50,000 cubic metres of soil across this county, and we actually work in a wider area, but statistically across this county, which actually represents 100,000 lorry movements on construction sites that we actually moved. So apologies to any construction hauliers that are listening today that are obviously looking for some business tips. I'm not going to be providing them, unfortunately. but that's it. It's quite a good process. And I'm just going to touch, if it's okay, I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction in terms of a personal frustration. So a lot of the work that we do is on new build housing sites. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that sometimes there's Kent Online feeding frenzies about new planning and housing developments and the like. And I think at the moment, the hot potato today is the Prince of Wales's land in Faversham, 2,500 houses.
I just heard about that this morning.
Mm. So, there's obviously resistance to this. And the phrase that I hear time and time again is that they're concreting over Kent. That's it. This is we're concreting. This is the go-to phrase, we're concreting over Kent. Well, what I can tell you, and based on Protection for Rural England statistics, is that Kent, firstly, is the second most wooded county after Nottinghamshire, and at the moment, less than 5% of it is developed.
Wow, you wouldn't think that. I live in Hermitage Lane.
Yeah, so... But it is, if you go out to the east of the county, mm-hmm. you can drive almost from village to village, and you'll get swathes of countryside between, say, yeah. Whitfield and then going up the Eastry Bypass. It's countryside as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I was there yesterday.
And even if you then look at other parts of the county, so you've got your big conurbation areas, but the infrastructure, it comfortably makes up. If I say, okay, someone wants to challenge the figures, but certainly comfortably less than 10%, and it is nearer 5%, that's physically just got some sort of, cover on it, and roads, factories, that's everything, housing, the whole lot. My business is reliant on housing construction. Mm-hmm. That sector makes up 70 to 80% of what we do, but I wouldn't say that it's actually being overdeveloped.
But you do also go out of Kent as well, don't you? I mean, I've spoken to you being up in St Albans and...
Yeah, so our working area starts off in Southampton and follows the M3 corridor, then round up to Berkshire and the M25 corridor all the way round, and then Thames Estuary.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, if I look at picking up how we value the employees, I want to make sure that we're working... in a range where they're not too far from home, mm-hmm. where I can get to sites and actually go and give them their cuddle, whatever they might need. So I don't want to be taking on work in the Midlands where it's just too far away for us to be able to manage and control. Some of our guys are kind enough, if we've got a little bit of distance, they stay away, but we actually use Airbnb rather than hotels
mm-hmm.
because I want to give them some home comforts. I want them to go to the supermarket, cook themselves a meal, do something, and... Let's face it, Premier Inn or a Travel Lodge, they're pretty bloody faceless organisations, really. There's not a lot of pleasure to be gained in staying in those guys. So I want really good circumstances, and I'll give you a working example, Linda, where back in the summer, we'd got a project near Heathrow Airport.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't actually within the airport there, but if you sort of... come out of our site on the Staines Road and you turned left, you're going into Feltham and you're going into the suburbs of West London. But if you actually turn right, Heathrow, for the massive sort of conurbation and infrastructure area that it is, just the other side of the M25 is Eton, Windsor, Datchet.
Mm.
They're all on the Thames. And we found an Airbnb for the guys because they were there for 3 weeks. So the height of the summer, hottest day of the year, and I'm actually getting a FaceTime from the guys saying, we're actually swimming in the Thames, we're cooling off. And, I think they didn't want to drink too much of the water down there. But actually, for me, it was a pleasure to see that, because what sort of day do you think those guys gave me the following day? They've come in, it's a lovely day, they're sitting out there on a little jetty, cooling off in the river, they're going in, they're rested, they're coming back 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're absolutely good to go.
Mm. And so, that's the thing with, I think, you know, treating your staff right, is that you get it back tenfold, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, that's it. You know, so I'm investing in them, and you know, yeah, it's an investment that I get a reward on.
So are you looking to grow the business anymore? Are you happy with the size it is now? What's the plans?
So if we keep the business as is, it's quite difficult to maintain a level, because we're gaining customers organically.
Mm-hmm.
So all the time we're increasing the customer base of the business, those people want to give us repeat business.
Mm.
So it's actually very difficult, Linda, to stay in that sort of position. If we said, okay, right, we're going to get to £4 million turnover and we're going to keep it at that, it almost wouldn't let me.
Mm.
Because the way that we built the business up and...
Which is a nice position to be in, let's be fair.
Yeah, so those customers are coming back. It's all right. So every new customer then becomes a repeat customer. So we almost, as I see it, the business has just got a natural growth pattern. And where we're looking at then, to sort of answer that question, we are actually looking at making a strategic change, which is a sort of a go-again process. I was fortunate enough a couple of years back to do an HSBC seminar on business growth. And it was quite an interesting concept. The guy sketched it up just on a dry whiteboard, and I'll try and describe it in a way that allows people to visualise it. But effectively, what the guy described is a standard business model where you've got two individuals running the business. So there we are. You've got Bob and Dave, or whoever they might be, Alice and Pauline, and they're running a business as two individuals. They both know what the other one's thinking. It's a pretty much a standard setup. But then they get to a point where they're getting behind on the housekeeping of other things there. So they introduce a person behind. So you've got two people on the front end, and then, you know, a back of house
mm-hmm.
person. And then that was, you know, that became the sort of typical model. And what he then said to people, they're like, okay, so how do you grow that business? What's the next step? And so some people would say, oh, well, then you're another person at the front. Oh, yeah, but then the person at the back, they're managing three people. You get another person in, but then if you've got three at the front and then two behind there, that's a one for a one and a half person. And in fact, you know, just when it's 2-1, you've got a ratio 2-1. Now you've actually, it's 1.5-1. So you're increasing your overhead. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what this guy, who was not affiliated to HSBC, he was a speaker brought in by them, but he basically says, what you do, you just go again. So the 2-1 scenario, you go 4-2.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And you just sort of, you double it up. And so what he's advocating is what he called the jump. So if you got to, say, 3-1, you know, you then like you're 6-2 and so on. So he said, look, if you're going to do something, you're going to grow your business, you go big on it. And generally that would be by acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd look to take on a similar size business.
Yep.
And that then, it helps you maintain your margin, controls your overhead, because all the time you're varying the front end or the back end,
mm-hmm.
it's difficult to maintain that initial ratio that you set out with.
And are there many businesses that offer what you do?
Locally in Kent, there are a couple of smaller companies
mm-hmm.
That used to be the size of my business, but I've obviously massively outgrown them. Partly because of how we operate, how we go about things, and it's a people business, Linda.
Yeah, you've got to look after people.
Do you need a drink of water? Because it's
not actually dying over in the corner.
Yes, it's not acceptable to die on air. The paperwork is actually really difficult.
Oh dear!
Take a moment. You'll be fine.
So I'm going to ask you a really awkward question now, which is. The system you use, does it make there less potholes in the road?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
No.
Does it make more?
Look, it what it does, it allows people to construct brand new roads. So okay. we don't do anything where it's existing highways.
Okay.
Do people know how potholes are formed?
No. Frost, isn't it? Frost and then heat?
Well, there we go. That's it. It's exactly that. So effectively what happens, the reason that you get them in the winter time is that over a period of time, roads deteriorate very slightly and you just get a crack. But then water gets into the crack and freezes. And
that expands.
You'd be quite surprised at the power of frozen water in that expansion, and that will lift up roads and tarmac and stuff. And then once it's actually done, it's an ongoing process. Once you've exposed that, it's just a continuing process.
All right, okay.
There is some really good technology in the marketplace now to repair these, where you've actually got machines that almost could cut out a section of tarmac.
The
reinstatement there. But the investment of those, you know, it's £200,000-£250,000 for a piece of kit, and you've got local authorities that it's difficult because it's a public sector process. Mm-hmm. The local authorities aren't really going to allow, or the government are going to allow private sector investment. If you actually handed potholes over to the private sector, it would be dealt with. Mm-hmm. But it's not all the time. It stays in the hands of the local authorities. It's never going to be a priority, unfortunately.
I wonder if they will ever hand it over to the private sector. If that's something they would do, because it must be. Imagine how much they're getting sued.
Yeah.
You know, for burst tyres and.
And of course, we have a near Victorian infrastructure as well, haven't we? We're not. Most of the roads, the underlying part of the roads, weren't built for 44 ton vehicles going down them, were they?
No, not at all. And it's the physical number of vehicles. So if we're actually, you know, having input into some road design, which we do on occasions, it's all to do with the million standard axles is a standard term. So you're looking at how many axles might go over that section of road in a period of time. And that's the design life. But the design life now of roads is actually less than it was 30 or 40 years ago. They were actually designed for a longer period of time, but just the deterioration is because the traffic's increased exponentially far more than everyone ever would have expected.
Thought would happen.
Yeah.
And when they built the M25, they more or less decided it was too small straight away, didn't they?
Yeah, that's it. And I think another factor here then, and this is getting away particularly just from my business, but you know, just as a general opinion, my Ford Ranger outside weighs 2.5 ton. I think, you know, we're all of an age here. Tom, you're a little bit of a pup, but the rest of
I'll
us
take
in,
it.
Yeah, the rest of us in here, you know, if you actually look at a Ford Fiesta or yesteryear cars, Ford Escort, any of those sort of things,
800-900 kilos.
Yeah, and now you're looking at, you know, a Kia Sportage, you know, weighs over a ton, and you know, most cars, you don't get a lot of change out of a ton for weight of cars now. And then, you know, the amount of SUVs, you know, your Land Rover Discovery, you're looking at, you know, getting on for 2 ton. So you've seen a change not only in the volume of traffic, but in the sheer weight of the vehicle as well, which is going to be impacting on those roads.
There you go.
So I've got a plug-in hybrid with a 200-kilo battery in the back of it. So it's more than the pet. So it's an extra 200. You take an electric car, 400-500 kilos in the batteries alone.
Wow. That's really interesting. Is there anything, who's your best type of client? Who's someone you want to sort of be speaking to over the radio waves that can help your business?
So the typical clients that we have are either housing developers or construction companies that might be building, let's say, distribution sheds. I mean, you can go up and down the M20 now and see factories or storage, you know, DHL or some of there. So these sort of things we're involved with. Lots of the housing developers we're involved with. But if we get back to my alter ego, Mudman, that was a part of the business where there were a lot of wet weather construction sites and people were looking for a solution, seeing that we could offer that solution, but only on a large scale. So initially they were approaching us thinking that we could come around to a small construction site. What can you do? And the equipment that we use is quite hefty. We're bringing in tankers full of powder and, you know, tractors and mixers and various things. So one of the suppliers actually also produced their product in jumbo bags. So we then thought, okay, right, there's an option here. And so that's how we looked at the process initially, supplying a few bags, and it very, very quickly gained traction. So now we're at a point where we can actually virtually go to like a single property. And on the network evening earlier on in the week, it was quite pleasing to chat to Mr. Madden.
Dan.
Yeah, who's just a small developer. He does refurbishment work and other things there. And 9 months ago, I wouldn't have even been able to say, look, yeah, we can provide you a solution here. But he's straight away saying, look, I've just got, it's a little development. We've got two houses here. But you know what? It's an absolute bog. It's a real sort of quagmire. And this is something that we could actually provide a product for. So we've almost created a business within a business from this smaller products. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's given us a real boost. And in fact, in February, it actually became 20% of our turnover from zero. So, and March will be a similar level of sales, and it'll go into April. And then the summer months, we'd like to think that it's not going to be anywhere near as wet as it was at the start of the year.
Is this all because of Mudman?
Yes. I think, yeah, Mudman, he's got a fair bit to do with it. The action figures aren't quite in the shops yet. I'll try and get them in the shops at Christmas.
You can order little custom Funko Pops. Get one offs.
Yeah. I reckon that would go down really well, Mudman, don't you? Yeah. You'd end up with mud wrestlers and everything. Oh,
that's why I was trying to avoid going down that road, Linda.
No, Linda ran at it.
The only other, so I have done a little bit of homework on this, because it's like, you know, when you Google yourself. There is actually Mud Men, and this is just a completely random thing, but actually Mud Men are also types of Chinese sculpture. Like sort of porcelain figures, you know, Capo di Monte and those sort of
stuff. Terracotta stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, if you actually look at Mud Man or Mud Men, when you Google it, the first thing that comes up is all these little sort of small Chinese figurines made out of surprisingly mud.
Yeah.
And then hand-painted and glazed. So, so unfortunately, the Chinese actually beat me to it by a couple of thousand years. I've got a bit of a run on them at the moment because they've got other things they're interested in, the Chinese.
Okay, so if smaller or larger developers want to get hold of you, how can they do that?
It's easy, remediology.com. That's it. We're nice and easy to find. My mobile number is on there, and so it's an easy website. And in fact, we've got a YouTube channel, which just gives people a flavour for what we do. As a marketing tool, it's really good to just to express that, you know, people can see exactly what we do. They can dial in, look at the YouTube. And once again, touching on the network evening the other day, there was a young lad there that I was delighted to have some time with, young Maximus.
Yes.
And Linda introduced him as a person that's looking to run his own business. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be a content creator. He's got a long way to go, mm-hmm. But we indulged him, and he's putting together some very simplistic content at the moment. But you got to start from somewhere.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I'd like to come along to one of my construction sites. We'll give you a bit of time. You bring whatever, you know, is it your phone, whatever media you use to record this, come along, and you put something up on your channel, and I'll do that as well, and I'll put it on our channel. I'll explain to people what that is, and once again, it just sort of humanises the channel that we've got and shows it's not all about business. It's about some individuals there, and you know, the lad wanted a little bit of encouragement.
Bless him. I mean, he's 10 years old. Did you meet him, Gary, at Maidstone?
No, I haven't.
So he came to Maidstone. So his mother is Martha King, and he started his own business, and she said, I'd love to come to your networking group, but can I bring my son? He's starting his own business and he's 10. And I said, yeah, absolutely, bring him along if he wants to. So he did Maidstone. He sat next to his mum. But at Ashford, he was completely on his own. And he networked on his own as if he, as a business, as any other business person. And I thought that was amazing. I mean, have you met Satya? So Satya is a university student, and he was one of the first people to come along that wasn't an actual business. And I think what it shows is that, you know, networking is about helping people develop their skills.
Yeah.
And it's really helped him. I mean, it really, he's thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, he, I was a bit, I'm not going to say hard on him, but he was explaining what he did. And I said, okay, I'm going to ask you a business question now. How are you monetizing this? Because at the moment, if you're not monetizing it, it's not a business. It's a bit of fun, but he wants to generate a business from it. So I said, okay, so what you really need to do is get content to a number of views or to a particular type or style that interests people and get some content in there, get some advertising revenue or something there. Mm-hmm. And it's the amount of people now that – well, you know, an influencer now, that's a career, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. YouTuber. He introduced himself to me as a YouTuber.
Yeah. It makes me shudder, but that's it. You know, this is what people are doing, and that, you know, influencers and YouTubers, that is how certain parts of the industry are going, and that's how they monetize themselves and actually earn a pretty good living from it. So I think, you know, he's at a point where he just needs to sort of develop some of that content, make it a little bit more unusual, a bit more quirky, and that's how he will start to get some views. And once he gets a bit of traction on there and gets some of those views, then, yeah, he's off and running.
Brilliant. So, I mean, if you were to come to a networking event and meet a 10-year-old, what would your first response be? Because it's not like you're going to go into most networking events and meet someone who's 10.
I guess... you wait for the first 2 minutes and see what they're like.
Yes, yeah.
And that's all you can do.
Yes.
Yes.
So we're going to go on to now, I'm going to get Tom to read out those other ones, if that's all right, Tom, and just talk about Maidstone. Maidstone is actually our biggest one, and Medway is a close second, isn't it, really? We always sell out there or oversell, really, on that one. So the girls are from Dartford, though, I believe, and Medway.
We've got Claire from Mortgage Advice Bureau Kent, has said rates are moving a bit at the moment due to ongoing global uncertainty and inflation, which affects how lenders price their mortgages. Some lenders are even changing or withdrawing deals at short notice. If your fixed rate is ending in the next 6 to 12 months, or thinking of buying, it's definitely worth reviewing your options early. And we also had, that's the wrong button. Sue from UW saying that UW still have fixed rates in the current energy crisis and they are happy to help anybody get peace of mind on their bills.
Fantastic. Thank you, girls. So thank you so much to everyone in Synergy for their input. So I'm going to go to Gary now because Gary was renowned for hating networking. So...
slightly.
You've been coming along to us for 9 months now. What is it that you like about Synergy?
I make no bones. And I still don't like networking.
Done.
But network, Synergy Network isn't networking. The other networking is you wander into a room, you walk up to people, and it's so artificial. You start a conversation with somebody that you haven't got a clue what they do, whether, you know, if there's a match or not a match. And in my case, when I was first started networking, I walked up to someone and say, Dr. Dr. Friday is a perfect example. I walk up, I talk to him and I think, no, there's nothing, there's no connection, there's nothing there at all. At Synergy, where you're forced to sit around a table and talk to people.
Love how you said forced.
Yes. Oh, and I emphasize again, with the dreaded bell being rung.
I'm good at putting the old hand up the back.
Oh, yeah. You actually start having conversations with people and... on a business level, for me, no, I don't think there's anything Dr. Friday could bring, but I've gone along to one of his shows and my wife took far too many notes. So,
so it wasn't How to Kill Your Husband.
So it was a training course.
There was, she actually,
How to Commit Murder.
Yeah, she wanted to do webinars on it as well. But and then you start talking to different people and, you know, one thing that I've discovered is – there's a particular thing in our business called entity, which is all around about the operator license. So if you've got a partnership, one of the partners dies, the partnership's broken, the operator license has ended. Or if your accountant tells you you're a partnership, become a limited company, your operator license ends, you've got to create a new one. And it's so often 2 or 3 years down the line, they renew the license, say, oh, we're no longer a partnership, we're a limited company. Back comes a letter saying part of your vehicle's up, you haven't got an operator's license.
Oh, gosh.
And accountants don't know that. And the number of accountants I've spoken to at Synergy events and said, ah, you might not think you've got any interest in what I do, but how about this? And it's like you set a bomb off in the room because, you know, it why wouldn't they know? It's not in their remit at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a real big ticking bomb. We see that about every 6 weeks on average. Takes you about 90 days to get a license back after that.
Regular then, really,
every 6 weeks. You know, somebody in a partnership dies or you're a sole trader and you become a limited company. It's really common. And something like Synergy stops me having preconceptions that the person I'm talking to couldn't bring anything to my business because it opened my eyes that I could actually talk to people that were. And, you know, I had firm principles that networking wasn't for me, but as I've often said, I have principles, but if you don't like them, I've got others. And, it works. It just works for me. And it's social and, you know, we end up on the same table, Tom and I, about once every 3 or 4 meetings, and we still seem to find something to talk to each other about. So, yeah, it's a workable format for a miserable old curmudgeon to come along and sit through. Yeah.
But in contrast, Tom goes to lots of different ones. Don't you go to Entrepreneur Circle? I was talking to someone about the owner of that the other day.
What, Nigel?
Yeah, he's built a very big, successful business.
Yes, he was on TV the other week.
I know, I heard. Yeah. And that's amazing. I mean, I'd like to think that years down the line, because how long's Entrepreneur Circle been going?
In various elements, probably somewhere between sort of 15, 20 years. In different, it's kind of built to that stage. As exactly, EC, I know it's definitely been sort of about 10 years of EC as EC.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's taken a while to get to that point and obviously finding the right thing that works for them.
Yeah, because I knew him before that and you must have known him before that as well. And I can't think in what capacity. I think it may have been that he came to the Chamber of Commerce.
Might well have been, yeah.
Many years ago.
He's based in Birmingham.
So how do I know him then? Has he written a book?
A few.
Oh, that's probably Anna. Right.
Yeah, he's based in Solihull, Birmingham.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And what other ones do you go to? You go to the Hive?
Goes to the Hive, although I sometimes also includes the business.
Yeah, so Colin or...
It's like I've actually made 2 networking events this year so far. As a me personally, which is really weird for me. So I do EC, I do the Hive, I do business clubs, I do Chamber of Commerce when I can get to them. We do your events, I do Purple Cow, quite a few, which is odd for someone who is very much, I am not an extrovert in any way, shape or form.
So do they all deliver?
I have got work out of it. I've got work out of. And one's because it was a newer thing. They all deliver different things. I'd say my most successful, purely because of the size of contracts that have come out of it, has been the Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also the first one we went to.
Mm-hmm.
Every event, I know when we first start going to any sort of new networking event, I plan not to expect anything for 12 months.
But that's the best way, I think, to plan.
Yeah, so you look at with sort of my industry specifically, people have got to get to know you because they are trusting a hell of a lot of their business with you.
Mm-hmm.
And generally people are in contracts.
Mm. And they're giving you their secrets, aren't they?
They're giving you almost the keys to their business.
Yeah.
So it's
a very wide spectrum though, Tom, isn't it? That's the thing that, you know, if you're looking at network events, pretty much everyone in the room has got a need for your services at some point in time, haven't they? If I look at you know, what I need to do, and it's got to be much more sort of targeted, because it's always going to be construction focused.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a wider range there, and I try and sort of look at, you know, more specific stuff. So Kent Construction Focus Group is mm-hmm. a good one for me.
That was a brilliant one.
Yeah, so it's linked into the chamber, but it's construction orientated. Breakfast meeting, and I'll always make sure I shuffle around, sit on some different tables, meet some new people, I then find that I do get a lot from that process.
Knowing a few of our clients go to that one because that's the industry they sit in.
Mm. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I went along as Ricky's guest once, and I really did enjoy. I enjoyed the whole thing. There was different people doing the presentations, a new one, of course.
Yeah,
which was good. What other ones did you go to? Because when I originally met you, it was an open networking with the chamber, wasn't it?
So chamber events generally. So we like to support the chamber, make sure that we're making use of services that they offer, because there's a lot of good value. There's a lot of HR support and other things out there that they'll provide at a level. If you've got a major HR issue, then they're not the go-to person. But if you want a little bit of discreet advice on a HR position, their chamber membership is all about like that. Basic accountancy services, recommendations, support.
Discount just on breakdown cover.
Which
I used today.
Yes.
Did you?
Chamber membership is just fantastic value for money. But you've then, like anything, you've got to go and make sure that you're making the best of it.
If you're not in the room, you're not getting anything out of it.
No. But that's the same as any. That's the same as us. If you know, if you're not in the room, you're not getting anything. No. And what about Rosie? Because you've introduced Rosie to us, and you've also introduced her to the chamber. Yeah.
So, my daughter Rosie, as Linda just mentioned, is a young entrepreneur. She's 27 years old now. But I'll be honest, I've got three children. She's the youngest, and I.
What does she do?
So she's a beautician. A beauty therapist, got her own salon now, but she started working, went to Homewood School just down the road, mm-hmm. and at 16 years old, studying beauty, and got a job in a local spa, wiping down the beds and clearing up rooms for clients to come in for the next treatments. The people there liked her so much that they offered her an apprenticeship, so at 16 years old, she's actually doing one day at college, 4 days working. And she's sort of grown up through there. She had a stint working at Champneys at Eastwell Manor, but got to a point where she actually felt that she wanted to do this at home. And it was a sort of, a bit, if you like, a Dragon's Den concept where you're looking at proof of concept.
Yep.
So we were having her at home, so she's actually treating people, getting those clients coming through the door. And once it got to a point where I could never park on the drive because it's just a constant.
You kicked her out at that point,
You then realise, okay, we now need to move the business on. And we saw some premises a couple of years ago. And it's just sort of going from strength to strength there. But I'm now encouraging her to get into the networking scenario. And once again, if a proportion of the networkers are female, mm-hmm. there's going to be treatments there pretty much for everybody. And it's... The demographic that she's got is almost like an 18 to 80, because even sort of...
Quite a wide focus then.
Yeah. So younger people have got certain types of needs and, more sort of glamorous looks. But then, right the way through that spectrum, you've got people that want, relaxation, massage, other things like that. So mm-hmm. she's actually finding, and what I've tried to do is encourage her not to work on a niche, but to actually offer as a wider range of services as possible through the business, so that she, once again, like yourself, she's covering that sort of wide spectrum. So,
she's not having to do it all herself, because I spoke to her the other day and she said, it's my day off today. And I thought, good on you. Yeah. She's got other people making up part of her business, hasn't she?
So there's a team of five or six people. I went in there and did a lot of the construction work and we refurbished it. And she set the home salon up in a garden room that we had, and that was hers. That was the Rose Room, from a Christian name. And once we found the premises and we realised that we could actually turn it into multiple rooms mm-hmm. within that facility, it was obviously the Rose Rooms, and that's how we've developed that. So she's got a couple of people that come in and rent rooms, carry out aesthetic treatments, other things specifically. Reiki is something that she does. And then other people are there carrying out all the usual sort of treatments. Not something that I can obviously persuade you to involved with too much, Linda, because you're absolutely gorgeous as you are.
Nice one.
So, yeah, and obviously, you won't really want to take on the over 60 spray tans that we do at the weekend.
No, but, I can get
on. You were winning there for a while. Yeah. I was impressed, seriously impressed.
But it's, look, I think the point I was going to make is that to be an entrepreneur doesn't have to be about university.
Oh, God, no.
So I've actually discouraged all three of my children from going down the university route. The middle daughter's a chef, and she went to Thanet Catering College. She actually did that after, I hope she's not listening, but after she pushed the fire alarm on the last day of term at Homewood and was then excluded from the following term. So she just went out on her own volition and got 2 years at Thanet Catering College. And has worked at the Abode in Canterbury and done some great things. My son was treated in sixth form as just like a social club with his mates. There wasn't really sort of much to it. And I would have feared for him if he went to university because it would be another 3 or 4 years of socialising. But he actually, he knuckled down, got himself a job in the truck stop in Ashford, wiping down tables and clearing up after Polish lorry drivers. Other lorry drivers are available. But that then led to him helping out in the kitchen area, cleaning up, and then, well, look, do you want to try something on the griddle? And then that led to him picking up a career in cooking. And he then actually got into construction testing, so he actually entered into my world through an introduction that I made for him. And the twist here is that when you're cooking, you're preparing food, you're weighing ingredients, you're doing various processes, and when he's testing soil for our type of work, you know, it's almost exactly the same. He's taken a soil sample, he's putting it into an oven to dry it out, so he weighs it beforehand and then weighs it afterwards once it's dry to find out how much water was in it. We're then looking at additives for the work that we do, so he's mixing things in. So actually there was this really sort of strange but very natural progression from catering into the business, and he actually worked in a testing lab for 10 years and joined my business at the start of last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he's part of the team. But I think the point that I'm going to make is that university doesn't have to be the prescribed route from a career potential.
No.
And if anything, there's some really good vocational training and other things there, you know, working on the job. And if you can find the right employer at sort of 17, 18, that's actually prepared to take you on and then, you know, get you some training in there, it's a great way to go for me.
Well, I mean, my youngest, you know, going to starting with me at a very young age, 16, and I put her into B&I. And that was really the making of her, I would say, because she now, her best friends are all people she's met through networking. You know, we ran a business, worked with Gary for his business, and she's now got a fantastic job in Harwicham. Really, really good. So she worked in the business for 10 years and then decided, Mum, you know, this self-employed stuff, I need to know where I am. You know, I'm in a relationship now with a baby. I need to know where I am. So she went down the employment route, and it's really working well for her.
And so, I think what it does, Linda, it builds the young person's communication skills. Because if you're going off to university, you almost don't. You can actually live a fairly insular life, can you? You know, you can just go to some lectures, eat, you know, pizza. Sorry, you know, if I'm classifying these people or pigeonholing them, but that's how we would sort of see it. That, you know, there's not a lot of reason for interaction and communication except within a very specific social circle that they might have. Whereas if you're in a working environment at 16 or 17, you're having to communicate, you're having to make yourself understood. Mm-hmm. And some people's personalities will take longer to flourish than others, but I think that they all come to the fore over a period of time, and you pick up those communication skills that all of us in the room here have all actually got over a period of time. And even curmudgeonly is a people's skill of a sort, isn't it?
Vaguely. I mean, we hired a young apprentice back in October, barely 18, and we went through a selection, but as I get, I got lucky again.
You did.
I landed in my bed of roses. And, yeah, she's absolute little superstar.
Yeah.
Really is. She's going to go far.
Yeah.
That's good,
and
isn't it?
Definitely, you know, a real keeper.
Yeah. Mm.
That's good. That's good to hear. Because they want encouraging because, you know, stepping out of that school environment is a bit sort of daunting. Mm. But if you've got the person that's got the right attitude, I mean, here's a
that's everything.
Well, yeah. Here's a thought for you that could the construction industry generally is really short on resource. So, you know, people might think, oh, yeah, you know, it's a bit of a downturn or whatever, but it is actually short of labour. There's always vacancies. And one of the things that we struggle with is excavator drivers, you know, to sit in a machine and dig holes. And it's, you know, maybe the domain of, you know, perhaps older men sitting there and, you know, with their machine. But what I can tell you now is that you're talking about state-of-the-art technology, GPS-operated, ergonomic seats, air conditioned, and
probably more comfortable in the cab than out on the
floor.
But don't they have to have certain licenses to be able to do that?
You do. So there's an element of training, and through organisations such as CSCS or NPORS, so you can get some accreditation. But it's a fairly straightforward entry, and you know you're looking at being able to earn, you know, even sort of starting off, you know, £18-20 an hour maybe, and that's. That's got to be better than flipping burgers or working in the service sector.
Did you see on social media that one of the Gallagher's grandsons, age 13, got his excavator?
He's great.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, really? He qualified to use a JCB.
Wow. Yeah.
Can't drive a car, but an excavator, golden. Yeah.
Scary. Are you looking to expand at all, Tom?
We are, yes. Obviously, I'm slightly particular when I do, because to be fair, I get annoyed with half my industry and the way that it works. So it's got to be the right person. But yes, we are absolutely.
Tell everyone here why you started, because that was one of the reasons, wasn't it?
It was. So I very much got annoyed with the way the majority of my industry seems to work. It's very no. You don't need to know this. You don't need to worry about this. We'll just deal with it for you. Which surface level sounds absolutely great, because yep, you're paying someone to deal with your IT or whatever. But actually that little bit of knowledge, that little bit of information makes you so much better, makes you more comfortable, makes you able to make informed decisions and not be so reliant on I have to go to ask that person. And I get they're probably doing it in a, well, I want to try and protect my job. If I tell them too much, they won't need me. No, they don't want to be an IT person. They want to run the business they're running. They just want to have a bit of ownership of the way their business runs and a bit of knowledge about how to make their life a bit easier.
And do you do sort of monthly contracts? How do you base the business? Because Gary was saying earlier, he sort of knows what's coming in.
So, yeah, we are it tends to be a 12-month contract. And, yeah, it's if you ring us every single day, it costs you the same amount as if you don't ring us at all. We're still working in the background. We're keeping things up to date. We're providing you with sort of strategic insights and guidance on how to do certain things that we think you should be looking at. It's still customer-led because it is not our place to tell a business, you must run in this way, you must do this, it's your business. We'll advise, we'll guide based on the information we know, but it is still, it's your money, it's your business, it's your decision. We're just there to guide you.
So do you cover IT and cyber and so like cyber security, those sorts of things?
Yeah. So if you want to go, the technical term is an MSSP, which is a managed services security provider. So we're an IT support company that focuses on cyber security. So we cover the whole gambit, whether for a lot of our customers it is, and every for the second the internet hits the building, we're there and we will manage contracts on your behalf, or they'll come through us, or if you don't want that, that's fine, we'll work with you and your suppliers and just make it so that take the pressure, the stress, the hassle out of IT, but so you still know what's going on.
What I found, Tom, over a period of time is that I think there was a point when technology was improving and I'm talking maybe sort of like, you know, mid-90s, you know, sort of 2000s, turn of the century. But what I've seen is that
IT is growing at such a rate that it's far outstripping my knowledge, and the knowledge gap for me is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas, you know, the classic, you know, the TV show IT.
IT Crowd.
Yeah. Yep. Have you tried switching it on, switching it off again?
That still works far too often.
Yes. We're way, way beyond that. And I think at a point where, you know, I could make it print. Oh, my printer's not working. Okay, yeah, we're going to do this. You know, now, the level of complexity mm-hmm. of IT is at such a level now that for people of that sort of mid-generation, it's tough, and we want to be able to pick up the phone to someone and actually get genuine advice.
Yeah.
You know what we don't want is like a, you know, a call center, something mm-hmm. like that. You know, you want to pick up a human, right? My printer won't print. Look, you know, my PC's doing this, and to have that involvement and stuff. Yeah. So there's still a pretty hefty reliance.
I actually love
that.
The way you called us the mid generation.
you're loving that bit.
Yeah? I
know. I'm the third or fourth midlife crisis.
Thank you so much to all of you for coming. It's been really educational for me, which it always is, these shows.
Every day's a school day.
Every day's a school day. So thank you so much. Yeah, we will be doing some photos as well. So, you know, please do share on your socials. And I'm now going to advert. So just quickly tell us, how can they get hold of you?
Plumwood.co.uk, plumbers in fruit, not as in drainage.
Tom.
So for IT support, it's it-ms.co.uk, or for speaking or cybersecurity type related stuff, find me on LinkedIn.
Brilliant. Okay. And Ricky?
Yep. LinkedIn as Ricky Hemmings, or as the business. We have a separate company page, Remediology SE Limited, the business website, remediology.com. And if you're a developer that's wanting to save money because you can't sell your houses, then you need to be saving some money. If you want to, if you've just got a small construction site and you're knee deep in mud, I'm also worth a call.
Mudman. Okay, on that we will finish. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And we look forward to seeing you on the 25th. And Jill will be with you next Wednesday from 2 p.m. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
Hello, Kent businesses. Tired of networking events that don't deliver? Synergy Networking Events has got you covered, whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro. Our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. All for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment.
Thank you for listening to the Business Network Show, featuring Jill Russell of the Jill Russell Consultancy and Linda Cloak, founder of Synergy Networking Events.